And thank you to everybody that read. At this point, I get to introduce our speaker for the evening. I've known Damon about as long as I've been sober, and just a couple of things I want to say before I get him up here. One is that today is his 21st birthday in sobriety today. And I say that just to talk about what kind of guy he is. He has a home group that he really expressed an interest in going there and picking up his 21 year chip. And I asked him, and he said yes anyway to come here and be with us. And I think that's a big testament to his program. And he just got off work. Of course, I called him at 7:35 when he wasn't here, and he had just gotten off work, and he was on his way. And I was going to, do we need to pick you up, or what do we need to do to get you here? Because that's the most nervous part for me when I host these things or get to chair these things. The other thing is we went on a trip to Houston. The Falcons made the Super Bowl last year. And he and another friend of ours drove to Houston just to hang out. And it was really cool to do in sobriety with two guys. We had a blast. I've got pictures. He didn't pay me the money I wanted for the pictures, so if you wanna see them, I've got them. They're really kind of cool. He's one of the funniest guys I know, but the one thing, he's as funny as he is and as funny as he is to be around, he takes this program very seriously. And I appreciate that just as much as I appreciate his company. And I'm proud to call him a friend, Damon J.
I won't make this. You know, I was thinking, 8 o'clock on Friday night, here we sit in an alcohol room psych hospital. Sterile room full of life choices, right? My name's Damon, I'm an alcoholic. Any of you guys want to talk after me? No, I do not ride a motorcycle. Don't do it. Don't care for it. That talk's same. You know, it's an honor. I was thinking when I come in here, the room across the hall or the rooms on the far wall, 20 years ago to this day, that's the first place I ever told my story at. It was New View Speaker Group. And there's this many people in there. I ain't nervous tonight. I was scared to death back then. But, you know, it's amazing how things change, man. And it all started from something that a drunk guy told me that was keep coming back. You know, and that's what I try to do is keep coming back. Really, that's the only thing I've ever done right is I kept coming back. You know, I was born and raised in South Georgia. I don't know if y'all can tell that by how I talk, but I was. And, you know, I'm not going to blame anything on my parents. I'm not going to blame anything on my upbringing because realistically, I'm here for one reason. It's my fault. I drank every drop of liquor I ever drank because of one reason, and that was because I wanted to. Nothing else. Now, I come from a pretty big family, and I'm not talking my dad, he's a short guy. I'm talking numbers, big numbers. You know, when I was growing up, I had two sets of grandparents, a set of great-grandparents, and a great-great-grandmother. And, man, that was great, you know. That's why there's so many greats in it. It was just great. And, you know, the women folk in my family, they were all black belt Southern Baptists. And the men in my family were, like, moonshiner. I hate that word, moonshiner, because it's on TV. And they made liquor, and they run liquor, but they drank a lot of liquor, too. They loved their craft. So, you know, that's what I grew up with. This no matter what you're doing, what you do, you're going to hell. That's what we were told. Or let's go over here and drink some corn liquor. So I want to go drink corn liquor. We'll worry about hell later. Or at least get there drunk and it won't matter. And that's how I grew up. Now, my grandfather, God rest his soul, he was 67 years old when he died, and 35 of them was in the penitentiary. And he's been to Jackson. That's where our family vacations were. Jackson, Thomaston, Thomasville, Reedsville, any Bill or Stun, that's where he was at. You know, we go see him, and it was for drinking liquor, making liquor. He liked to fight, but he wasn't too good at it. He'd been in 3,000 fights a whole lot, never won one. And he loved women. Oh my God, except my grandma. I remember one time, little bitty fella, we were going to see him. He was in Thomasville, and he was a mechanic at Florida there. I mean, the way this guy, and I'm talking heavy equipment, you know, bulldozers, motor graders, excavators, he could work on all that stuff. And you know, in the poor part of the state where I come from, which is basically below Jonesboro, you know, their DOT didn't exist down there. The convicts done work on the road. I don't know why they still do that. And I can say that because I'm not a convict and I don't care. But you know, my grandfather was, he was a master mechanic in this shop in this prison where he worked on all the stuff that they maintained the roads with. Because I don't know if y'all have ever seen one, but down south we got dirt roads. It's like roads made out of dirt, for real. You don't see that many up here. But, you know, they maintain these roads. Well, anyhow, he worked some kind of deal out with a guy that ran the kitchen, and he got 400 pounds of raisins. Well, he made raisin bucks with it. Well, he made liquor with the raisins, and he got the whole prison drunk. They had a riot, they calmed everything down, and they couldn't find him. They thought he'd escaped. Well, Ward went home, and you know, this was like a preacher and a parson at the church, and some of those old prisoners, the Ward lived on the property. Well, Ward went home, there my granddaddy in bed with his wife. So the next morning he left Thomasville and went straight to Reedsville. So that's the kind of awesomeness that I grew up with, you know. You never knew who was going to shoot at what or who. When you were going, or it wasn't no if, it was when, you know, you were going to get shot at, man. I'll tell this one little story, and I'll leave my family alone. My great-granddaddy had gone into the hospital, and everybody still fighting over this land today. It's a 500-acre farm in South Georgia. There's only three of us left, and two of us agree, and the other one wants to fight over it. It's just crazy. And I've always said anybody fights over his land's gonna die because it's cursed. So I'm waiting on my cousin to die because he's more fighting. But anyhow, my great-grandfather went to the hospital. My grandfather started a lot of crap. He shot my daddy, his son, twice in the back and once in the face. Well, daddy was going to the hospital, but he went to the liquor store first. And he got him a handful of liquor. And we all like Canadian liquor. That's the only thing out of Canada any of us like, is their liquor. So that good brown blend. But anyhow, he went and got a handle of liquor, and him and my two uncles figured it was time to get some revenge. So they hemmed up my granddaddy in his house and started shooting him, shooting at him. They didn't hit him but one. Didn't hurt him real bad. But yeah, and they shot at him for like 4.5 hours. They shot so long that one of them would leave and go get more bullets and come back. I was like 8 years old when this happened, and I was looking at the end of the road, and there were 7 deputy sheriff's cars at the end of the road. They would have gone. They said they were waiting, they weren't going to run out of bullets, and finally did. And that's what kind of crap I grew up with. You know, my dad loved neon, and he loved honky tonks, jug joints. Any of that crap you want to call it, that's what he loved. And when I was so glad when him and my mom divorced. I mean, it was great. Because he was a little asshole to start with. And he didn't know how to be a father. He didn't know how to be a husband. He didn't know any of that stuff. So he was real abusive and cranky and just a mean little midget is what he was. And when they divorced and I got to go stay with him, you know, that's what we did. We went to these places like, man, we went to these cool places. And I thought, and I'm 10, 11, 12 years old, and I'm thinking these places are cool. You know, there's something wrong there. But I can remember, you know, most kids, man, I can't wait to get my driver's license. I can't wait to be old enough to buy a gun. I can't wait to be old enough to, I couldn't wait to be old enough to drink legally, you know, because I took my first good, I'm not talking about my first drink, because I don't even remember that one. Daddy said the best thing for a baby with the colic was Pabst Blue Ribbon. So undoubtedly, I was drinking that when I was little. I don't know. But the first good drunk that I can remember, man, I was around 13 years old, and I never looked back. I said, I will spend the rest of my life trying to feel like this. This is the greatest thing I've ever experienced in my life. And it wasn't that, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in or any of that other stuff. I fit in anywhere I go because I was going to make a point of it. But I don't know, man. It's like, you know, if you can go here, why not go here? And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to stay there. And that was what I loved about high school. It was football and drinking. I didn't go to school from like December to when did they get out, dude? Amazing. So I fish. I love to fish too, but you know, I wanted to play football and drink liquor or beer, whatever. I just wanted to drink. I wanted to feel that elated feeling that, man, everything's cool. Kind of like Matthew McConaughey on Days of Confusion. All right, all right, all right. You know? That's how I wanted to feel, man, all the time. And I found it in that drink. So, you know, I don't know what your obsession is. Don't really matter. It's about the obsession with me. And what that drink and that desire to drink turned into was an overwhelming obsession to get more of this stuff, get it now, and get it in. And that was my obsession. That's what liquor had become for me. So, you know, I floated through school, I got out, I played football, whatever, that was fun. This girl got pregnant by me, I don't know how that happened, but she did. I was like, look, you're gonna have to take care of this because I'm drunk, so you can't leave that up to me. But anyhow, she got pregnant, and I think about when I raised I got a daughter, she's 25 now, she don't drink, but she probably smokes enough weed to fill this room up, and that's okay. I mean, you know, she don't live with me. She's on her own, and she does what she wants to do, and I'm cool with that. But, you know, I tried to raise her completely opposite than how I was raised. Because when I got that girl pregnant, the first thing I heard from these old black belt Southern Baptist women in my family, well, you need to marry that girl. That's the right thing to do. Man, and I have come to learn that the right thing to do isn't always what somebody else thinks it is, you know? Because that caused me a lot of grief and a lot of turmoil and a lot of hell marrying that woman. God bless her, man. And that's probably why I drank as much as I did putting up with her, because she was crazy. Really crazy. She was touched, I think. But, we moved up here. My sister wanted me to move to Atlanta. I said, why in the hell would I want to move up there? So I moved. I come up here. My kid had a doctor's appointment. And she said, I'll make you a deal. I'll leave you alone, but just try to find a job up here. And if you find one, you take it. If you don't, I'll never talk about it. So I put a little bit of effort into not finding a job, and I found one. So I had to move up here. Well, I was drunk when that happened, you know? So I moved up here with my wife and our daughter, and she was pregnant. Now, this one was mine. This is that right thing coming into play again. So we had separated, and she got pregnant by my best friend. Now, I didn't want to kill her or hurt her. Leave me and I would drink more, and then she would come back and I'd drink even more. You know, it's like, vicious cycle of just crap going on. And me trying to work and maintain a healthy alcoholic relationship with this bottle that I had. I know I jump around a lot, and that's okay. If you can't keep up with me, I don't even know what I'm saying half the time. But we moved up here, and things got just really bad. I got a DUI. Now, see, I disagree with that because, you know, down home, I was drunk one night, and I pulled my truck up on a park bench because the park benches was down the side of the street, which is stupid. And, you know, if you're doing something, well, I didn't have a phone back then, but, you know, I pulled up on the park bench, and I passed out trying to think about how to get it off. The bumper was up on it. So I passed out. Next thing I know, I hear on the window, I look, it's a deputy sheriff. He says, unlock the door now. I was like, okay. So I unlocked the door, and he opened it, and he pushed me over. And he got in the truck, and he got it off the park bench, and he drove me home. That's what cops should do, ain't it? Nah. But that's what, well, I went to school with this guy, too. It's like, you know, everybody in the sheriff's department I went to school with, we still weed out the evidence. Let me shut up. We didn't do everything lawfully and legally in that jail. We just go there and play cards. But you know, that's how I was being treated. So I was, my wife was running her mouth about something, cutting the grass, paying a bill, why is the lights off? You know, stupid stuff like that. So I was like, man, you know what? I had enough of this math, and I lived in Kennesaw. I thought that was the greatest place to live in the world. By God, you got to carry a gun up there, you know? Yeah. Wow. It's a law in Kennesaw. But anyhow, so I was living up there, so I wanted to go somewhere, so I went to the Cypress Lounge, the strip club. And they should have called it the Caesarian Lounge, because it was god-awful. I mean, it rivals the Claremont down there. So, yeah. And you know, that's another thing. This is what they were serious about, what they were trying to do. I'm at this strip club looking at these women, thinking how pretty they are, but how much trouble they are. They're wanting the house is pretty, and look how she's acting. So I left there, and Mary the police pulled me over. And he said, I've done a California roll. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, yeah, you rolled out of that stop sign without stopping. I said, there wasn't nothing coming. And, well, how do you know that? I said, there wasn't no damn headlights coming. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, you can see a headlight. And a California roll, I didn't really like it. So anyhow, I was in my truck, and I dipped. And there were like 400 dip cans in the back of my truck. He says, what's in these dip cans? I said, I don't know, dude. Y'all look. And he did. He looked at all 400 of them, you know. But he gave me a breathalyzer before then because he said, well, we're going to do a field sobriety test. I'm like, man, I can't say the alphabet sober. I'm not about to stand out here, you know, and do that on the side of the street and you embarrass me. That's all that is. So just bring your damn straw out here and let me blow it. Well, I blowed a 2.8, and I had a commercial driver's license. So, yeah, that sucked, man. I lost my driver's license for like a year. And my wife wouldn't bail me out. So I had to try to bail myself out. I got out. And we made it about 6 more months. And I come home from, I was working the day after Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving, I was at work. Come home, and there was a note on the table. She said she was going to get cigarettes. Well, that was in 1996. So she ought to be back any day now. She left and she said, I'm leaving. You knew it was coming. I'm like, thank God, what took you so long? So that was from, I can honestly tell you the darkest days of my drinking were from that beginning of December until March. It was Katie bar the door. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do. And you know, I can honestly say that I hear some horrific stories in Alcoholics Anonymous about the things that we lose. But see, I wasn't like most of you folks. I never had nothing to start with. You know, my bar was real low, you know. Like most of my friends, low. And I never aspired to be anything but drunk. And that didn't take a whole lot of effort. You know, it just didn't. Well, it did from December to damn March, but before that it didn't. And I loved it, man. But this is the crazy thing about this whole story now, is in 1987, my sister had moved here in Smyrna, She lived in Metro Atlanta in this part of it. And she's one of us. She's one of us too, you know. And she called me one day, and she never calls me. We never talk, you know. She does that now. We're good, you know, that's just how we are. And we're not like that today, but back then we were. Now she knew if she needed me, I'd be there in a minute, you know, and I wouldn't need an alibi or anything else. And I knew the same, but she had moved up here, and she'd gotten to where she was drinking real bad. But see, we had my dad, so we prepared ourselves to him. It's like, not that bad. Because you know? My pops, now, I hope pops gets to come up here. He's 70 years old now, or he'll be 70 in May. He got to Alcoholics Anonymous about 3 years before I did. And man, he's a nut. He's a trip. And you know, he talks about, he was on his fifth habitual violator. Now, you know, three DUIs is a habitual violator, so you can do the math on that. He had 15. And he had a judge that revocated his license three times for life in the state of Georgia. And that judge said, how in the hell do you keep getting driver's license? And he looked like a CIA agent, because you'd go through his wallet. Yeah, and this was back before everything was linked together, you know. He had an Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida driver's license. And double copies of all them, because you know, you say, I lost it, they send you another one in the mail. They don't do that anymore. You know, you have to do something about it now. And you can't get away with nothing no more like you can get it. Anyhow, back to my sister, she had moved up here, and she had hit bottom. She really had. And somebody told her about this place on South Cobb Drive that was full of these, basically, here's the description: redneck, white trash, biker, old crusty buttholes, I guess you could say. And it's called Rebo's. It was 87, so I was 16, 17, something like that. So my sister started her journey in Alcoholics Anonymous at Rebo's. We would come up to visit, man, I'd go to meetings with her. Because meetings were cool back then. You know, you didn't have all the channels that you got on TV now. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of stuff. You hear them talking about God and smoking cigarettes and people shooting something like that. I hear photograph of one that's on the DVD player. I said, yeah, that's how you got to remember to knock yourself out. So we were talking about AA, and he's like, and you know, it's hard to explain a spiritual 12-step program to people out there because they're thinking from here and you're explaining from here, you know, and it's like, he's like, man, you know, you haven't drank in over 20 years. I said, yeah. He says, well, you know, you must have been pretty strong to win the victory over liquor. I says, no, man, I was weak. It was when I surrendered that I won. He said, well, that makes no sense. I said, I know it don't. And then he would go into me and he'd say, well, what do you do in AA? I said, well, we go to meetings. He said, oh, like group therapy. I'm like, no, I ain't like group therapy.
They're not AA approved, but whatever. I don't care. It's a little different today than it was then. Back then, I'm not going to say those old guys were mean, because they weren't. But when you done a stupid crap, they called you out on it. And they didn't pour no sugar on top. It's like, man, you're dumb. I'm like, what? He said, you just dumb. But you're lucky, because you know, there's nobody that's too dumb for Ed. There's a lot of people too smart for Ed, but nobody's too dumb for Ed. You might just make it. Oh, that made me so mad. Speedy Moore. Marvelous alcohol. And you know, the thing about Speedy is he's been sober for 2,500 years, like Sam over there. I think them were the two alcoholics that Noah put on the altar. Speedy would always say he's marvelous alcoholic. And he, y'all, he was just, you know, I crept behind the door. You know, I don't know about going good, but I mean, I know good. And I had me a baseball bat, and I was trying to go through the stand, but I was scared to death of him and his food. I mean, he had no problem. Poor Speedy had my
Just go ahead and do it. These are the best we do. These are not the best that we ask you to go through. These are not the steps that we ask you to make.
These are the steps that we took. I'm like, well, what are you saying, Speedy? Well, you might want to take the steps, dumbass. Okay, well, I'm going to take some steps. And I'm not going to hit you today with a baseball bat. But I'm not tomorrow. And I've been to meetings all over the Southeast. And, you know, they ask professors. And, yeah, for Damon, for Rebo's Marietta. The guy comes to me, is that asshole Speedy Moore still alive? Yeah, doing fine as usual, it looks like, you know. He's give resentments all over the Southeastern United States. And I hated him, and I was scared of him, but I love him today. And he's not here, but he is here, you know. And there's so many more that are gone, but they're here. You know, the people that helped me form a relationship with a power that I believe in is greater than me. The people that I connected with and become part of the we with, back then a lot of them were gone. But they're not, because they're here, you know. And they'll be here until I go on, and hopefully. And that's the true circle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's not a triangle in the middle, man, that's a pyramid. And what is a pyramid? The basic building blocks of a pyramid, the broader the base, the higher the point. So the broader that my base becomes in Alcoholics Anonymous, the higher my point can be. You know, and I've learned that. And I've got to interact with drunks not only in the greater Atlanta area. We're so blessed up here with meetings we have. You can't find time to go to a meeting over here, you feel shit is what you are. I was in South Georgia and I had a meeting in our hometown the third Wednesday of the month. And there's three people that show up. And I was like, need none of the three of them. And I won. But you know, look here, there's no need not to become part of what, everything starts off, we, you know, becoming part of the we. And an old guy named Rusty Jones is a paranoid schizophrenic. He can hold a group conscience by himself. Yes. And I mean, a meeting sometimes by himself, there were so many, but God bless him, you know, the way that he helped the alcoholic of his type was, you know, he done some things in Emory for test medication for what he had going on. And he's one of the most well-read men I've ever met in my life. And you know, he took time up with me. And people can talk about money and a lot of things, but when you're lonely drunk, time is priceless. And these guys, they gave me their time. I didn't feel like I deserved it, but they took time with me. And they started inviting me out places. And I slowly felt like I was becoming part of this thing, this we. And unity is paramount in recovery to me. You know, and I look back now, when I was first getting sober, there was like 40 of us. God, I wouldn't say young people, but I ain't young no more. But I was 26 when I got here. So yeah, I was young then. Didn't look as good, but I was young. And there were about 40 of us that ran together, man, and we done everything together. You know, there's maybe four of us left. So it's about broadening that base to me. And these people that I got sober with, man, they took me to places that I never would go, that I didn't know about. I wound up at the other side of the lounge one night. And I don't know, y'all don't know what that is, that's good. I ought to shut up and not tell the rest of the story, but I am. But that was a gay bar down on Piedmont Cheshire Bridge in that area. You know, Satan's playground down there. And yeah, I went to this bar, and there's this guy about tall as Joe and big as me wearing a sequin gown. I'm like, what the hell kind of? You know, I'm sober 6 months, and I'm like, what the heck? Whoa. And, but we had a friend that was in a band, and she was singing in there. Called me out over the mic, embarrassed the hell out of me. Never go back. I never went back again unless she would have been singing. But, you know, it was cool, man. I never got to experience things because I was so closed-minded about everything. when I was 90 days sober, they had this thing called Geeky Pond. That's, I can't even say what all that is. It's like the Georgia Conference of Young People in AA. And they were having a conference down at the old Castle Gate on Northside Drive. And it was a Saturday night that Princess Diana died. I'll never forget that long ago. But anyhow, the Castle Gate was famous for their swinger party. You know? So I'm 90 days into AA, lustful and angry. I got my sponsor with me, and he takes me down there. So I walk down this hallway, and it was one of them Y-shaped, kind of three-winged, four-winged hotels. So I go down this one wing that we're all on, the AA folks, and I turn down this other wing. Well, the swingers are down there. And they go in and they crack pretty hard down there. And I'm thinking to myself, man, AA's pretty cool. And then my sponsor pulls me back by the ear and told me what was going on. I don't know about stuff like that. But you know, all the stuff that I didn't know about, this simple process and this simple program, which has been simple. Now, it hasn't been easy, but it's been simple. Has been Dr. Seuss. He's my favorite doctor out of all of them, you know, because he says some pretty good things that even I can remember. But he says, "You never know the value of a moment until it becomes a memory." And man, I can't believe I remember that. That's Dr. Seuss. I thought I could do Green Eggs and Ham, but no. That's one of the things that he said. And I value so many moments that are memories now from just 20 short years of this. You know, my family's come together because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, my sister, she came in 1987, stayed sober for 23 years, and found it necessary to go back out and have a drink. And it terrifies me because they say the longer you stay sober, the harder it is to come back. And she barely made it back. Now I think she's got like 3 or 4 years now. She was telling me the other day, she said, "You should relapse." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, where I'll have more time than you again." And go ahead, shut up, sit down, and go read the big book. But, you know, my sister's in AA, my brother-in-law's in Alcoholics Anonymous, my father is, my mama needs to stay where she's at, she's good. Yeah, she just stay over there. I love you, but I love you when you're gone, even more. And you know, my daughter was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. My kid went to more meetings than most people in their first 6 months did. You know, she went to 2 meetings a day with me, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock. It was McDonald's or McDonald's in between. And you know, she done that. And the cool thing about her, even though she does like to partake in a little bit of the herb every now and again, the cool thing about her, man, is when life gets on her, she processes life like we do. She'll call me. "Well, Daddy, I don't know about this." "Well, what's your part in it, Lana?" "Well, I hadn't looked at my part in it." And I said, "Well, maybe that's the time to do that." And I'll hang up on her. And she'll start. But it's amazing, you know, you might not get sober if you hang out with AA or NAA, but I'll put it to you like this. That last 6 months I talked about, I drank. I had been in AA before. 10 years, on and off. As a visitor, as a participant, I picked up enough white chips to cover that wall back there. But the worst place I'd ever been in my life was sitting at Proud Mary's Dark Bar on 41 up above Atworth, drunk as hell, wondering what you guys were doing in AA. When you're out there drunk, wondering what's going on in here, there's the line, and it has been crossed. You are officially a pickle. So when the book talks about that, you know, some of us know loneliness as few men do. Yeah, man, I knew that. I experienced that loneliness. But see, I understand what desperation is all about today. And I understand that the pain that was on the outside of this room had to get greater than the pain that was on the inside for me and everyone coming in. And it did. And what happened on my last drunk was nothing out of the ordinary. I woke up and, you know, I'd run into stuff and I always carry a bloody nose with me. And it wasn't for no other reason than I just ran into shit because I was clumsy. But I would always get up in the morning and go look in the mirror and clean the blood. You know, get ready for that first good drink in the morning. And I done that and I splashed the water in my face. I looked in the mirror and I knew I was through. I guess, you know, I hear some of these people talk about their chakras. My chakras were aligned. My head, my heart, my guts, and my ass were all in straight line with each other. And they knew that they were done. And I was finished. And I'm like, good grief, I reckon I have to go to AA now. And I did. Didn't want to. Hated y'all, man. But now I've come to love y'all for what you've given me. And I heard people say, well, I got a second chance at life. I don't believe that. I believe I got a chance at a second life. Because I've never lived, you know, a new happiness and a new freedom. New something I've never experienced before. And those promises have come true for me. And ever since the Word. And now, I'm not going to sit up here and say that every day is perfect. Because it's not. And my rough time of the year is like November to February. My work runs real low and, you know, there's some prayer involved and beating bushes involved. I'm a contractor. I work for myself. So I work for a butthole and he's lazy sometimes, don't want to get work, you know. So it's like a real, real rough time. So it gets lean, but always seems to get through, you know, and why is that? Well, if you got time to go to two meetings today, go to two meetings. And I go to a meeting and I find some work. You got to watch taking some jobs at Rebo's, though. Them people don't like to pay you. They don't. God bless them. But you know, we make do. I don't get no more put on me than I can handle. And the truly great thing that has been of supreme value to me through my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous is that no matter what I go through, I don't have to go through it by myself anymore. Not at all. You know, and I met some cool people here. Like I say, I used to be a big wrestling fan before it got off fame the last 3 or 4 years. But you know, I met a couple of my favorite wrestlers up there, Rebo. I think they were sneaking up from down here, but I ain't gonna say who they were unless you want to know. No, I still ain't gonna say. But yeah, man, that's some weird people. I met a so-called sitcom star up there. She was sitting out. She was all she had a meeting one night, and she was all harping on anonymity. Well, you know who you see here. I'm like, I raised my hand. I said, ain't nobody worried about you being here. You on TV land now. Nobody cares.
You ain't on me.
My shows, my YouTube videos are better than you now. But you know, the thing that I've learned the most in here and I enjoy is laughing. I'm not going to take myself serious, so if y'all do, that's your problem. I'm going to look at every day as it's a gift. And, you know, I either get blessings or lessons. And every lesson is an opportunity to grow. And experience is that thing I get 30, 45 seconds after I need it the most, you know. But I can learn from my mistakes today, and that's what this program and this philosophy has taught me, is that, you know, it doesn't say if when we continue this 10th step. It says when. It's going to happen. You know, watch it. Life's a terminal disease, man. I'm not getting out alive. So I'm going to do this kind of the same way that I drank. I'm going to enjoy it while I'm here. And, you know, I'm blessed with a lot of great friends and people that I've met and family. We got a great nephew and a great niece now. They ain't really that great, but I like being a great uncle. I'm a great uncle. They suck, but I'm pretty good. And I get to see myself as an alcoholic and an 18-month-old kid. You know, like, he'll take his sippy cup, and you know, the straw goes to the bottle. Well, he'll turn it up, he can't get nothing to drink. He'll take it, he'll swing out of it. That's what I used to do. And I'm talking not at 18 months old, I'm talking at like 29 years old. So I've learned that if I'm not taking myself so serious, and I've allowed myself to be a human being, then everybody else has got a chance. You know, I still struggle with road rage. No, I don't. No, hell no, I don't read. I get mad. I don't get raped. It's not like I jack a gun out the door. I could, though, but I don't. But yeah, man, I just have to learn. You know, it's like we work all over Atlanta for Kroger. So they're all over, you know, like cat crap. They're all over the place. So we used to leave like at 6:30 in the morning. Well, traffic has gotten worse in the last 5 years. So now we leave at 4:30 in the morning. And we don't have to deal with traffic. You know, there's a solution for everything. Instead of me trying to bend everybody else's wheel my way, I need to learn how to bend my wheel. So we get up at 4:30, I'm home by noon. You know, I can watch Wendy and all of those people on TV. Not Sports Center joke. But I have to learn that, you know, wearing sobriety is like a loose garment, man. I can't be restricted. Because when I get restricted, my thinking it turns negative, and you know, bam, there I go into well, this ain't gonna work, this ain't gonna happen, and I might as well not do this, and I have to stay positive, and you know, it's hard sometimes, it really is. But that's the beauty of being a part of a fellowship and having unity. You know, one of the things that we used to say is that we all take turns being the craziest person in the room. We just try to let the newcomer take the most turns. You know? And I used to love that. And another one I love, be careful who you talk to when they first come in, because you never know who's going to be your sponsor one day. And that's been a lie on me a couple of times. But I know that through practical action, and now it's not based on theory anymore. It's not based on hope. It's based on experience. This has worked for me. And I think being that this has worked for me, then it can work for anybody. When all we have to do is just pick up a simple kit of spiritual food and follow the directions on the idiot card. That's the idiot card. Those are the directions. And they're even numbered so you don't get confused. You know, it's like, I want to do 1, 2, and 13. Oh. Damn, we got 13 on ours to repo. I'm good. Okay. I'm going to tell y'all one last story because they told me I could stop. But, you know, I used to live my life in fantasy. Love fantasy, man. There wasn't no consequences in fantasy. And there's a story about these two old drunks and how they shook two. You know, drunks don't wake up and shake two. Two old drunks shook two under a bridge one day. And one of the drunks looked to the other and said, man, I had the best dream of my life last night. He said, yeah, what'd you dream? He said, well, I dreamed that my mama called me up and she gave me some tickets to Disneyland and some money, and I went and I rode all the rides and I met Donald Duck and Goofy and looked at all the pretty girls, and it was awesome. And the other drunk said, that ain't nothing, man. I had a better dream than that. He said, well, what'd you dream? He said, well, I dreamed I had an apartment, a luxurious apartment, downtown. And come on. Knock on the door and open, and there's these two naked girls with a case of liquor each. And the other drunk got caught in the story. He said, damn, man, why didn't you call me? He said, well, I did, but your mama said you said Disneyland. So that's the fantasy that I lived in. And I'm so grateful today to be in reality with you all. Thank you all.
You get to experience all of that on a road trip to Houston too if you go with David.
Yeah, really, really good. Thank you so much, David. Appreciate you more than you know, my friend. And Mary Beth has agreed to explain chip system.